From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made around this time of the year, in 2014. It was the end of the first year that Evan Dawson hosted this program, and the Connections team decided it would be a fun way to close out 2014 by hearing from people in our community about their favorite books that they had read during the year. Since then, what we call Rochester and Western New York's favorite books of the year has become an annual Connections tradition. Now, we're continuing that tradition this year, but we're changing it up a bit. If you've heard this program in the past, you may have heard some pre-recorded interviews with a number of people from our community. This year, instead, we are talking to community leaders live, and we're opening it up to you as well. We want to hear what you think about books you've read this year, your favorites, the impact those books have had on you, what stood out in the world of fiction and nonfiction in your opinion. And you can call the program with your short reviews. That number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email us at connections@wxxi.org, and I'm on Twitter at mmacmedia. So this hour is a great way to set up a reading list for 2018, or even figure out some last-minute gift ideas. And things are a little clunky off the top there because we were already having so much fun talking about books that we've read and how many books to talk about, because my guests this hour have brought a truckload of books into the studio. There's no more room for people. Joining me in studio is Kyle Semmel, the Executive Director of Writers and Books. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also here is Leslie Youngblood. She is a writer.
Hi.
With two new books coming out, one in November of next year, correct?
Yes, just one, actually, November 2018.
Okay, and then you have a contract for a second.
Yes, you're okay. Right, contract.
And we'll talk about all that exciting stuff during this hour. Candace Hudson is a teacher at Northwood Elementary School in Hilton. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And Tony Liuzzi is a poet and associate professor of English at Monroe Community College. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
So, we can continue our conversation that we were having before the hour began, but I find it so exciting that all of you have brought books to read, and we could do 3 hours on this topic. But I'd like to go around just and ask each of you, do you read for pleasure outside of work? All of you are writers or educators or dealing with writers or educators. How much time do you have just to read for pleasure? Leslie, we'll start with you.
Well, actually, to read for pleasure, I honestly don't do as much now since I've been working on my novel. What I do, I think, is read with a purpose. I read to enhance perhaps the book I'm working on, either for structure or plot or genre. So I just can't turn it off and just read for pleasure if I'm working on a project. Mm-hmm. So read with purpose.
Okay, I like that, read with purpose. I have to do the same thing because we get so many books to read for this show. And I wish I had more time to read for pleasure. But sometimes we find things that we want to read for pleasure and we make them shows.
Yes. So,
Candace, how about you? I know you're busy teaching every day, but do you have time to read for pleasure?
I do. One of the perks of teaching, of course, is having the summers off. Mm. So that's when I get most of my pleasurable reading in. During the school year, though, most of the books I read are books that I'm previewing that I'm going to read with my students. So I do get pleasure out of those books.
Mm-hmm. How many books do you think you read in that sense?
Wow.
Piles and piles of,
yes,
children's books.
Since September, I'd say I've read about 13, and
wow,
sometimes at the same time.
Nice. Yes. Tony, how about you? Reading for
pleasure.
I would echo
what Leslie said, the idea of reading with purpose, but that is extremely pleasurable to me.
Yes.
That I'm always reading with a purpose. I mean, reading new works of poetry or reading novels and so forth, but trying to take something away with the language and use it in my own work, but also that is in a very exciting experience. So.
Mm-hmm. And Kyle, how about you? You're dealing with piles of books every day at Writers and Books.
Yeah, I would also echo Tony and Leslie on that one too. I do read a lot for a purpose. Certainly I've been writing fiction for many years as well too, and I try to read in the area that I'm most particularly interested in terms of fiction. But I also love reading multiple books at once. So I will read nonfiction primarily for pleasure and stick to fiction for when I'm trying to really get into technique and style.
When we were talking last week, you told me you had a top 10 list, but you've come with 4, so you're narrowing it down to 4. I did notice a theme with some of the books that you've chosen. Tell us a little bit about what you were really focused on reading this year.
Well, I love post-apocalyptic novels, and I love novels that take reality and twist it. So, you know, some of the books that I love this past year, I won't get into it, I'll just say some. So Colson Whitehead's The Underground Railroad was a terrific book. The Dark Net by Benjamin Percy, I did bring that one today, but it's not the one I'll talk about. And Again by Jessica Chiarella, which was a fantastic debut novel. Also had a bend of twisting the realist, and it was a terrific book. So yeah, I mean, I really like books that just aren't quite, how do I say it, things that are a little bit in the future, a little bit based in reality, but taking it and just imagining what scientific and technological discoveries will bring in the next century.
So which book of the four did you want to start with?
The book I'm going to talk about is Oryx and Crake. So Margaret Atwood. This is a book that I've long been wanting to read, and finally got around to doing it within the last month, actually. And I will put it on my list because it's simply a marvelous book. It is also set in the future and at a kind of indeterminate time in the future, but one that global warming has clearly set in this future. And by way of example, Hudson Bay in Canada is it's the warmest time of the year is February in this in this book. But essentially follows the life of Snowman, or Jimmy. He goes in two different names. We're looking at the contemporary Snowman, which is set in the contemporary, that time, whatever that age is, when the world has changed dramatically. And then there's Jimmy's story. Jimmy is the same person, of course, but his story begins at the time before the world went to chaos. And so you see where he is involved in part of that change. His friend Crake is a major figure in that change. I won't give away the plot. I'm trying not to.
No spoilers.
But it's a terrific book, and one, especially if you like the post-apocalyptic. And the beautiful thing about Margaret Atwood is that she is funny as well. Mm. She has a good sense of language. She has a wonderful sense of humor.
And now with the popularity of A Handmaid's Tale, the film, the television series, how are you? Were you driven to pursue a Margaret Atwood book because of anything going on politically, or is that just a book that you've had?
It's just a book I've had in my mind. One of the things that's nice about many, especially with post-apocalyptic books, you could always couch them in political terms. You could always see something in them. But, you know, I don't necessarily read it for any political reason.
Mm-hmm. Are you the type of person who can, you're reading multiple books at once, if you find that one is not interesting to you, can you stop in the middle and just say, I'm done? Or do you feel the need to finish it until that very last page to say that you've read the whole book?
I can stop. I never used to be able to, but when I realized years ago that there were just too many books that I really wanted to read, and if I don't like a book, I don't really feel the need to finish it. Unless it's something that I'm being paid to finish, say. I don't feel any issues with stopping a book.
But no problem finishing?
No, definitely not. This is any of the books that I brought or put on my top 10 list, they will easily be finished.
Can you repeat the name and title? Just listeners, if you're at home writing these down, here's Kyle's book for you.
So my book is Oryx and Crake by Margaret Atwood.
Margaret Atwood, very good. Thanks, Kyle. Leslie, I saw you laughing when I asked the question about can you stop a book mid-book. Is that something you do or try not to do?
That's something that I do, and I do it very quickly. And because I understand that, I have that in my mind when I'm writing. Would this make a person stop reading? Is this interesting enough? Should I cut this? Is this getting boring? Because I think that's a reader's right to just stop. It's not interesting. Something in it is not connecting with that reader, and they'll move on. And I think as a writer, that is what motivates me to sharpen my prose and to make every line count.
And you're going through some major success right now with your book deal. Tell us about that.
Well, thank you. I did sign a two-book deal with Disney Hyperion recently. This is perhaps my second time talking about it on air. So it's all fairly new to me.
Oh, just get nice and close to that mic.
Okay. It's all fairly new, and I'm taking it in. And right now, I'm just doing the work for it. I'm actually my third and final revision before it goes off to the copy editor is due Thursday.
Oh, and so, you're here? What are you
I'm
doing?
Here because I love talking about books, and I do appreciate Kyle telling me about this and the invite. So I had to come, but after this, straight home, straight back to the kitchen table, nothing fancy, just working on that revision to make sure it's in by Thursday. So that's where I am with that. And because of that, I think that's why I said I'm reading with a purpose more so than ever, because you just don't have time to break away and do it for pleasure. But I do have to take a moment and take in some other works.
And your book is called Love Like Sky.
Yes, my publication that will be out November 2018 with Disney Hyperion is Love Like Sky. And it's really about the endless love of family. The two little African-American girls are in what they call a blended up family. And they're just trying to make sure that mommy still loves us, daddy still loves us, with both parents being remarried. So that's part of my life. It's part of a lot of people's lives these days. So that's it in a nutshell. Love Like Sky, about blended up family and the love that transcends.
And I know you mentioned in an interview with the Democrat and Chronicle, it's not a fluff novel for the middle grades. You're tackling some hard issues.
Right.
Some personal things from your life.
Right. I don't believe in fluff novels. I did lose my brother due to a tragic tragedy. He was killed, and from that, so many things changed in my life. I stepped away from teaching. I moved back home to Rochester. So it's been a journey since then. And anything I write, I just don't believe in fluff. I think kids are more advanced than we give them credit for, and I have an audience. This is my chance, and I want to make it count. So I tackle some issues outside of the blended family. I tackle, you know, diabetes. I tackle Alzheimer's. I tackle a lot of things that kids face to help teachers have an in to talk about these issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you all the success with that. Congratulations to you. And you brought two books today to talk about. Let's start with one. Which one would you like to talk
about? I'll start with The Hate You Give, and that's by Angie Thomas. And what drew me to that is that it's a middle grade novel, and middle grade is perhaps grades, I would think 8 through, well, no, 13 and up, perhaps, would be like the younger, well, it's actually young adult. Mm-hmm. My writing is middle grade. This, The Hate You Give, is considered a YA or young adult novel. And it was getting so much attention that I just had to stop and take a look at it. And it deals with police brutality. It deals with the impact of police brutality on a community. And the main character, and all of this is, none of this is a giveaway. It's right there in the back of the book. It deals,
that's how everyone's so sensitive about plot spoilers.
Yeah, that's how engaging what I'm saying is. It deals with police brutality. It deals with the main character, Star, who is somewhat living what she calls a double life. She lives in perhaps, for lack of a better word, the inner city or the ghetto, as they say in the book. But then she's transferred out to a public, to a suburban school. So she's dealing with that type of duality. And then it also was about the fact that her best friend was shot by a police officer, and how that plays out in the community. So it's an excellent read. The chapters are short, but they're impactful.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I've been really impressed with some of the young adult novels that have come out recently. I was doing research for a show we did a while back about really strong themes and hard news issues that they're addressing. It's not what I remember when I was a young adult. It's not The Babysitter's Club, which I never read, and no hate to The Babysitter's
right,
Club. But
right.
Now we're really tackling what's going on in society. And I know there are a lot of books about LGBTQ issues.
Exactly.
and graphic novels that are really addressing social themes. And Candace, I'm sure that some of your students are probably talking about books that are popular to them. Are you noticing a similar trend?
I do notice a similar trend. It's funny how the book that I actually chose to discuss today, some of my students who are only in sixth grade had actually read the book. So I was a little shocked by that, but I was glad that they did. Just to segue into the book that I chose, it's called 13 Reasons Why by Jay Asher. And the funny thing is, one of you mentioned starting books and stopping it. This book came out in 2007. And at the time, I was a teacher in an inner city school in Perth Amboy, New Jersey, teaching sixth graders. It was considered a middle school. Their emotions were all over the place.
Exactly.
And I had one particular student, and she was going through a rough time, and she ended up trying to commit suicide. Mm. And so for 2 weeks straight, I spent many nights with her in the hospital reading to her, just regular books. And one night, this nurse, I don't know her name, from Raritan Bay Hospital, she walked over to me and she handed me this book. And she's like, I think you really need to read this. It would help you help her. I'm like, okay. So I made it to the first three chapters. Nope. No, thank you. Mm. Can't do this. Put it down. That student, since then, she recovered, got a lot of mental health assistance, and she's actually, I believe, 24 and finishing up her degree. So
oh, good for her.
It was a good ending for her. However, this book, the main character does not have a good ending. Mm. She suffers bullying by her classmates. She suffers a sexual assault. Don't want to give too much away. So this past summer, my girlfriend Shanna, hi Shanna, I said to her, we should read this book together. I need moral support to get through this. So it was a tough read. Both Shanna and I are educators. We have students this age. We're both parents of children this age. And it was emotionally raw, just listening to the way this character felt. And the premise of the book is she records her suicide on 13 different tapes. And then 2 weeks after she does commit suicide, she has a friend deliver them to each of her persons that abused her or made her feel some type of way. And what really, I guess, sunk into me was that on her list was a teacher and a school psychologist who she tried to talk to, and they both just brushed it aside. So I know your previous...
Our previous hour was about bullying.
Was about bullying. So it just really touches home to me because I'm raising a son in this area of social media bullying, and even it happens to adults. I mean, it's a huge topic that I think should be covered, but I'm concerned that this particular book has been censored somewhat.
Mm.
I know it's been pulled from some mm-hmm. school bookshelves.
Libraries.
This year it became popular again because Netflix turned it into a series. And I, as an adult, the series was difficult to watch. But I think it's a discussion that we need to be having with all of our children. Mm-hmm. So,
we did an hour-long discussion on that series earlier this year, and some of the questions that have been raised are if it perpetuates some of these problems, because right. some critics are saying it glorifies mm-hmm. suicide. What do you think, Candace?
I feel as a parent, I would rather see this and be shocked and scared.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather be frightened and know to, like, okay, I need to go home and check my son's cell phone, who's sending him a message, what messages are he sending, is he on social media hiding from me? I need to know this. And I feel like if more parents were aware that these things happened, we could prevent a lot of these suicides or attempted suicides.
Mm-hmm. So 13 Reasons Why by Jay Asher. Thanks, Candace. Mm-hmm. Thanks for bringing that in. Before we get to Tony's pile, Ted has been waiting on the phone for a little while. Hi, Tedda. Tedda in Rochester.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Alrighty.
Go ahead.
Three books, 1984. Anybody I meet who has a political comment, I say, please, please read a book about our possible future, labeled 1984 by George Orwell. It's okay. A very real possible future. Now, Heaven is Real came out this past year. It's written by a neurosurgeon who was in a coma for over a week. Mm-hmm. And for anyone with any faith-related issues, I was raised agnostic. I'm a physician. It's a fascinating book.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it now. I read 2 to 3 books a day. I cut back from 4, and I work full-time. And I'm suggesting to you that this is a book that I've read now 4 times. And I bought 10 copies and given it to people. That's pretty powerful.
It is. Thanks, Tedda. So Heaven is for Real and 1984. I just turned to Kyle because we're talking about dystopian novels again. 1984, that exploded after the 2016 election. Sales of that book exploded, and I think they had to print more copies. I can't remember the news stories exactly, but is that something that you talked about at Writers and Books, how certain classics come back based on what's going on in society?
Well, we didn't really talk about it at Writers and Books so much, but it's, yeah, I think it's pretty clear. And this is a very topical book for obvious reasons, and an important book. there are so many others that, you know, you could say. I mean, there's the Russian novel We. Be yeah. worth bringing back. I would love to see that come back in a way that 1984 did. There's a Swedish novel that I'm going to have to come with later in the show, because it's another dystopian type of novel that fits into the vein of 1984 that would be I would love to see get bigger play here in the States.
What's it called?
I'll come back to that.
Oh,
I have to
okay.
look at my
it's a
phone
tease.
Because it's it's not coming into my brain right now.
Okay. No problem. So listeners, from TEDA 1984 and Heaven is for Real. So turning now to Tony, who has a pile of three I'm seeing in front of mm-hmm. me. Tony, what's your top pick of your three?
The top pick of the three is for choosing one that was written this year, and it's a new and select, or it's a selected poetry of Per Aag Brandt, who's a Danish poet, and it's called If I Were a Suicide Bomber. And with a very provocative title, obviously. And it's published by Open Letter Books, which is run out of the University of Rochester. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd give them a shout out. They publish exclusively foreign language titles and translation, and they do, on the average, about one book of poetry a year. And I've seen a number of them, but this one actually spoke to me in a number of ways. Perhaps the most compelling feature of it is that he tends to use containers. A lot of the poems look the same on the page, are these boxy things that are anywhere from 12 to 15 lines long, with the line lengths being generally the same length. And despite the uniformity of the look, the poems themselves are very varied. So I like this idea of having this kind of this very uniform container, but spilling anything into it. And so it's been very compelling. It's a very ironic, obviously, book with a book like If I Were a Suicide Bomber. And it's very, I find it very contemporary in a number of ways.
What are some of the poems that stood out to you in that collection?
Well, unlike the novels, I don't worry about giving anything away because, first of all, almost no one reads poetry. And also poetry in translation gets a rough deal. Since they're short, I'm going to read one of them.
Sure.
And then
yes,
it gives
please.
A sense of his ironic style. And he does not have titles for these books, or some of the books in here. And so one of the poems just doesn't have a title. Recent research shows that communication and thought are related, but in an odd way. The rate of speed has an inverse effect on them. The faster one communicates, the less one thinks. And the slower one communicates, the more thought is able to slip into what's communicated. This is the difference between poetry and stocks. Even though both do a little thinking, and very fast poetry does just as little as stock rates, poetry must therefore be difficult.
And, I love that.
And so you see that it's very prosy. It's not very flowery. There's not a lot of attempt at metaphor, but at the same time, it's got these surprising turns.
Mm-hmm. In it, yeah. What drew you to that book initially?
Well, I always give everything from Open Letter a chance. So that started, and when I started noticing the routine container for a lot of these poems, I thought, mm. oh, he's working with form. And I, as a poet, I myself try to work with odd forms, whether they be syllabic or shaped-based. And so it was something that I knew I could work with. And so started reading it and seeing the variety of the work in it was exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of Open Letter Books, our friend Chad Post sent me a tweet this morning talking about how he doesn't really believe in top 10 lists. Sorry, Kyle. They're friends. It's okay. But he did send me to a website, bombmagazine.org, where mm. he's written about some of his favorite books of the year. And he says, for me, 2017 included three monumental artistic moments. First up, I reread Joyce's Ulysses for the first time in 20 years, finishing on Bloomsday over a pint of Guinness, as one should. When I was a kid, I loved Stephen and his artistic fire. Decades on, Bloom's guilt and resignation is so much closer to the way that I experience the world. I spent about 8 hours and 8 Guinnesses explaining all of this to any and everyone within earshot of Rochester's Irish bars. So
for someone who doesn't believe in top 10 lists, he seems to have embraced the spirit of the question.
That's true. Listeners, you can be like Chad Post and send us your favorite books of the year. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. You can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia, or you can call the program and talk to us Over the phone, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We've had a lot of feedback coming in via email and Twitter this morning. Here's an email from Philip. He says, my favorite book this year is Fantasyland by Kurt Anderson, which explores the U.S.'s 500-year history of developing extreme and outlandish religions, most based loosely on Christianity. There are some shocking revelations, such as the fact that more than 50% of practicing American Christians are evangelicals. Our unique religiosity also enables our societally extreme belief in conspiracies, a really revealing read. So Fantasyland by Kurt Anderson, that's from Phil. And we actually did an hour on that very book with Kurt Anderson. So if you don't have time to read the book and you do have time to listen to an hour of radio, just check out the podcast on our website. Have any of you read that book, Fantasyland?
Sounds great, but I haven't.
No.
I do want to comment, though, on something that was said earlier about you had asked a question about if you begin a book and it doesn't interest
you. Oh, yeah. How about
you,
Tony? Do you stop?
No, I was hearing the responses, and it's true. I think we have the right to put a book down when we're not assigned it, right?
Sure.
One of my favorite books of all time was a book that I could not stand reading for the first about 50 pages or so. I said, I'm going to stop at page 60. If I can't get into this. And then right around that time, magically, the whole thing just came together. And it was Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon. And it was probably one of the most rewarding books I ever read. But for the first 50 or 60 pages, I was just like, this is terrible. I'm just going to put this down.
Absolutely. That book I read for pleasure. I've read it 6-7 times. I love it. And I agree with that. I think sometimes, like Candace was saying, wherever you are in your life, maybe a book doesn't speak to you at that moment, but it does at a later time. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember a book that I stopped and picked up again, but that book, I loved it from sentence one.
Oh, see, now, to me, it was like a really great orchestral piece where it didn't really kick in until, I mean, everything started to make sense. Then I was like, oh, I'm getting all the parts.
I just love her words. I mean, I just gravitated to it from moment one. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I love Toni Morrison as author, and I started to read her books as a teenager when it was a lot more difficult. One of her favorites, Beloved, I had to start and stop at least 10 times, and it wasn't until maybe the age of 17 where I just dove right in, and I absolutely loved the book. It was amazing. So I think most of her books are just, they're kind of deep. You just got to stick with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember reading, I was on a Dostoevsky kick when I was an undergrad, and I was reading a number of things, and then maybe around the age of 19, seeing The Brothers Karamazov, I said, oh, I'm going to read this. I keep hearing great things. And about 20 pages in, I threw it down. I said, no one acts this way. And then about 5 years later, I picked it up and started reading it. I said, everybody acts this way.
Wow.
It was a very different experience.
I'm just thinking about if you're watching a TV show and you're not interested, it's so easy just to change the channel, turn it off, and no one feels any guilt doing that. But isn't there a sense of guilt sometimes when you're like, I don't want to read this book? I don't know. That's just me, I guess, speaking for myself. I find it hard to say, I can't read any more of this book.
Well, I don't know if I feel guilty, but I guess as an adult, I don't. But I do know that say, for instance, when I'm trying to encourage a teen to read, you know, we have to encourage them to read more. So, like, even with, as Candace was saying, with The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, I connected with my goddaughter with that book. You read it and we'll read it together, and you have a conversation about it. So, you know, as adults, perhaps it's easier for us to stop, but we have to give kids more of a motivation to read.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
One thing I would say to that is I think that often we're not giving the kids the right books to read.
Right.
And I think it's important that we don't just continue this tradition of giving these six books that we're traditionally reading in schools, you know, and just like, well, what actually motivates these kids? And maybe that's why YA and middle grade books are becoming much more interesting these days, because we're getting out of that historical bent towards just doing the same books every year.
Exactly.
You know?
And I do not think that I could have connected with her on a more traditional book, I suppose. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but this book has a lot of just current events, and I know that I would be able to connect with her off that.
I have to say, I'm also impressed with some of the children's books that are coming out now too. I was in Target a couple weeks ago looking for a book for my godson, and they had a board book about a little boy who goes to the barbershop for the first time. And it, do you know the book?
It's called The Crown. Actually, I was I was just reading that book today, and I think it's Derek Barnes.
Okay,
it's called The Crown, or I think The Old to the Fresh Cut.
Okay,
about African Americans' tradition of going to the barbershop, especially with young black men. Mm-hmm. And I was maybe earlier today, I was on social media, and the author was doing a podcast with his son reading the book. And I believe his son is on the cover of the book. And it's all about empowerment for African-American boys. And that trip to the barbershop is so much more than we've given it credit for, or people in society have given it credit for. And a lot of barbershops these days are taking that time in the chair as a time to talk about books. Mm. And I've heard a couple programs like that, where this is the time for the barber to talk to the young man about what's going on and to refer a book.
Mm-hmm. Kyla, I know you have a 7-year-old now as of yesterday. He had a birthday
Actually
recently.
Today.
Oh, today. Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
His party
to your
was
son.
Yesterday. But
oh, okay. What's he reading?
He's reading the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. Mm. He's really into those right now. And that and the Magic Treehouse are the two that he's really into those series.
That's cool. I know that I was reading Barnes & Noble's list of top 100 books. I just read the top 10. But Harry Potter is number 2, number 3,
wow,
number 8, number 9. But The Getaway, part of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, was number 10.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I think he's either got or he's getting for his birthday. I'm not sure if he has that one. I've lost track, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We are late for our only break of the hour. Of course we are, because we're talking about books. So we'll take our short break. When we come back, more of your feedback. Listeners, if you'd like to share your favorite book that you've read this year, it doesn't have to have been published in 2017. You just need to have read it in 2017. You can call the program at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. So more with our guests, more with you when we come back. I'm Megan Mack. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we're talking about millennials and philanthropy. Millennials sometimes get a bad rap. Maybe they're considered selfish by some people, but a number of people in our community are proving that that is not true. We'll talk to local millennials about giving trends, why they give, and how. Then in our second hour, mystery items at the Memorial Art Gallery. Should be a fun conversation. Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about Rochester and Western New York's favorite books of the year. It's an annual Connections tradition. We're changing up the format today, and we're doing it live. We're talking to some guests in studio and also to you. So feel free to call the program or email us if you'd like to talk about your favorite book that you've read this year, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. And you can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And during the break, Kyle remembered the name of a book that he wanted to share with us. Go ahead, Kyle.
So it's The Unit by Ninni Holmquist. It's a fairly new book, but it's, you know, it's about body harvesting. Doesn't quite mesh with, you know, today in the United States, but it's still a wonderful futuristic type novel that could ultimately be true to a degree if technology continues the way it's going now. So,
and that was the theme of a lot of the books on your list this year.
I love them.
Well, we had many comments come in. And I have to say, Tony, I didn't see too many about poetry. I'm sorry to say that.
I can talk about novels. I can talk about nonfiction.
I'm not trying to stereotype you. I'm just surprised. I thought I'd see more. But here's a note from Emily. She read 55 books this year, and she told me earlier today her usual amount is around 70. So a little less than usual. But some of her favorites from this year, in no particular order, The Mothers by Britt Bennett. She said it's really well-written and compelling, and it's, quote-unquote, an abortion story rather than a story where a girl decides to keep her baby. She spoke at U of R this fall and is about 27, the writer. And Emily says she's totally inspired by and envious of her. Anyone heard of The Mothers?
I've read it. It's a great book. Heard of
it. Mm-hmm. Is it fiction?
It is fiction, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another one on her list, Hunger by Roxane Gay. A+, thought-provoking, and a must-read for everyone. I'm not familiar with that one. Are any of you?
Yeah.
I've heard of it. I have not read that, though.
Mm-hmm. So Emily sends me an email that's about a page long with all of her favorites. Oh, but she also lists her least favorites. We'll see if they resonate with any of you. The Sleep Revolution by Arianna Huffington. Wonder Valley by Ivy Pachoda. says she's trying too hard to showcase beauty and the grittiness of LA living. And then hashtag girl boss. No?
Nope.
Don't ring a bell.
I find that there are more books available now than ever, and there are more people writing well than ever. So there, when people are like, oh, you read, and I read all the time. People are like, have you heard of this? And I'm often saying, no. But it sounds like I'm not reading. But really what's happened, there's so much available that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here's an email from my colleague, Scott Feibusch. He says, Greater Gotham was his favorite book this year. Greater Gotham by Mike Wallace. And Scott wrote a little mini book report for me here. He says, it's a sequel to Gotham, the 1,400-page history Wallace co-wrote 20 years ago that took the story of New York City all the way from the Lenape Indians to the amalgamation of 1898. This time he takes 900-plus pages just to tell the city's history from 1898 to 1918, touching on every aspect of city life from politics to entertainment to transportation to business to media. It's especially interesting right now to read about the tension between big businesses and government regulators and between new immigrants and those who have been established there longer. And Scott says, not a book to bring on an airplane because it's pretty heavy, but that's Greater Gotham by Mike Wallace.
The 900 pages sentence might actually deter some people.
I shouldn't have read that. Well, thanks, Scott, for letting us know about that one.
I think it's funny you mentioned this. Scott said the book is heavy and not to bring on the airport. People who are not in the studio, I'm the only one that does not have a hard copy of my book. All of my books are on a Nook because it would just be ridiculous. But I feel kind of like the oddball without a hardcover book.
I actually... Well, I have to say it. I just have to read it on the hardcover. I just do.
I can read it in paperback as well, but I do definitely need a physical book.
Right, It could be paperback, but it has to be. Mm-hmm. I have to underline. I have to do all of that stuff. And I know you can do that on a Nook these days, but
I get it. Some people say it's like the smell of holding the book. My issue is I've purchased so many. There's nowhere to put them. So, yeah,
that's true.
Kyle, how about you? Hard copies or e-readers or both?
Well, an actual book is what I like to read. I don't typically like to do e-readers, mostly because I'm on the computer all day and I don't want to spend any more time on an electronic device. I have nothing against it per se, and but I just don't have any desire myself.
Mm-hmm. Up next on the phones is John in Rochester. Hi, John.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thank you for having me. This is a great discussion, and especially how you're talking about books and how they relate to life. And the book that I've read just recently is Burmese Days by George Orwell.
Oh, I love that book.
And I've read 1984 about three times over the years, and I just happened to get it used real cheap, and I thought, you know, I've got to read it. And after getting into it, I realized what a statement of it's about a young man who's working in a colonial service of Her Majesty in Burma and for Great Britain, and it's basically about the stories about him and the other white folks who are in their attitudes towards the Burmese. It's the book is about racism. And the protagonist in this wants to invite his doctor friend, his Burmese, into the gentleman's club, which is a big deal in Burma to be a member of the British gentleman's club, and everyone's against it. There's a lot of nasty things that happen. I'm not without going taking up too much time. One thing about this is written in 1934, and that's before George Orwell fought in the Spanish Civil War and got shot in the throat and he wrote unvarnished about these things, and then he actually fought against fascism. So I just wanted to mention that. And some people tell me I've got kind of a dark appetite for some books, but I don't know. I just find that helps me realize what's going on right now, especially now. It seems like half the American population is deluded. I don't know. It's that's my take. Anyway.
Well, thanks, John. Yeah, thanks for thanks for calling with that. So Burmese Days by George Orwell.
That is a beautiful book, by the way, and it's an unexpected book. We tend to think of Orwell in this kind of like political, allegorical way, and the book is a very, very different kettle of fish.
I am not familiar, but I will add it to my reading list. Anyone else familiar with that book?
Nope.
Of course you are, Kyle.
Familiar, but I haven't read it. I haven't read it. So, I mean...
Here's a book from our friend Vanessa Cheeks at Open Mic Rock. She says, I picked up Arab Voices by James Zogby. I thought with how misunderstood the Arab community is and how complex the region is in general, it would be a great read. It didn't disappoint. I learned so much. So Arab Voices. Oh, Tony, I take back what I said before about poetry. Here's Jordan saying Rupi Kaur. Is that how you pronounce
it? No idea.
Oh, Milk and Honey is the title of the book, and he says it's fantastic. I say that as someone who isn't typically into poetry. And that is another author whose books were on the top 100 list for Barnes & Noble. It was a different book, though. It was The Sun and Her Flowers, number 7. It's a collection of poetry, a vibrant and transcendent journey about growth and healing, ancestry and honoring one's roots. So, not familiar?
No.
Again, too much out there. We can't read everything. Also on Twitter, here's Eileen saying, Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders. Lots of nod. No, okay. Nope. Some nodding, some not.
I want to add to that. I'm a big audio book reader, and that particular one is a unique audiobook. It's about, there are 400 different voices, 400 different actors and actresses doing voices in that book. It is unique and worth a listen.
George Saunders was one of my professors in college. I feel so lucky to have had that experience. Yeah. And I got that book for Christmas or for my birthday and haven't had time to read it yet. But I remember reading The 10th of December. Any of you familiar with that one?
I haven't read that.
Oh, I loved it.
Lincoln and the Bardo is definitely worth a read, though. I'm not sure it's really a novel, but, you know, okay. But it's still a great book.
Kyle, let's tackle number 2 on your list. What else do you have?
Well, I had The Dark Net was another one. So Benjamin Percy. And this one I actually haven't finished yet. It is a book about... So everyone, of course, is familiar with The Dark Net as a thing on the internet. But this is a book that imagines what The Dark Net would be if it was also a portal for evil. And Benjamin Percy has written, you know, he does this really interesting thing with horror fiction. And so some of his books, and all of his books have some element of horror in them. And I'm, you know, kind of a fan of his work. And so this new one is essentially an imagining of this portal in that occurs in a building in Portland, Oregon, where he lives. And but it's using the dark net that we know from the internet, so as a way of entrance into the world. So I haven't gotten to the point where people are actually starting to save the world or anything like that, but it's you know, it's moving in that direction.
So The Dark Net by
Benjamin Percy. Yeah,
perfect. And we have a couple listeners calling with the same book, so let's go back to the phones. And this is Rich in Rochester. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Go ahead.
I know it's a very popular book, but Between the World and Me, Ta-Nehisi Coates, his book, I found it to be riveting, but deeply painful book to read. But it gives me, as a African American male, it does give you a peek into the way the community feels. But then it almost leaves me with this sense of almost hopelessness about it. It's a riveting book, though.
That is a book.
I don't know if anybody.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. That was a book that made a list a few times that we've done this show. I see a few of the panelists nodding. Has everyone read that book? Kyle?
On my
Leslie?
List to read, definitely.
On your list.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Rich. Thanks very much. And Joyce on Twitter agrees with you. That's on her list. She says, Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote this book for his son to explain and confront racism and offer hope. So a lot of different reactions to that book, but mostly very thoughtful. So Joyce also agrees. She also lists Braving the Wilderness by Breen Brown. She says, love her message and practices that connect courage and vulnerability to self self-worth, connection, and belonging. So we have a few books listed on Twitter that fall into that category. We'll talk about those. But up next on the phone is Monica in Pittsburgh. Hi, Monica.
Hi. Hello. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, welcome. Thanks so much. Go ahead.
I have three authors I'd like to recommend. Two are young adult authors. The first one is Tamora Pierce. She writes a range of books with very strong characters. I would recommend a book called The Will of the Empress. Then the second author I'd recommend is Mercedes Lackey. She's written quite a few adult novels, but she has branched out into a very interesting series for young adults, and the first one is called Hunter. The third author that is very interesting is Elizabeth Moon. She's also written quite a few adult novels, and one of her latest one is called Cold Welcome. I believe it's In Cold Welcome.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Monica. Add to the list, everyone. Sure. What we should do, what I should be doing, I'm not being a very good producer right now, is make a list as we go along and post them on the website. So
I'm making a list for you.
Oh, Candace, you're the best. You're hired. Thank you. Up next on the phone is Brenna in Rochester. Hi, Brenna.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
So I don't get a whole lot of chance to sit down and read, just with my life the way it is these days, but I'm a big fan of audiobooks. And two that I've really enjoyed recently are Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. You know, memoir, pretty heavy, but very, very good. Talks about the author's life growing up in pretty much a hillbilly family from like the Appalachian part of West Virginia and Kentucky, and then moving up to Ohio, and how that really followed him throughout his whole life and the challenges he faced, and ended up graduating from, I believe it was Yale Law School, could have been Harvard. But anyway, yeah, excellent book. And then just for total stupid fun, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So fantastic book. I know they had the movie out recently. I absolutely loved the book. The author, whose name I can't remember, took, you know, the entire original story and wove in a zombie apocalypse. And the narrator in the audiobook is fantastic. She has this lovely British accent, and she's talking about how they're attacking the zombies, and it's just delightful to listen to, if not a little macabre.
Well, thanks, Brenna. Thanks for those.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. She reminds me, I listened to an audiobook driving to and from Toronto. It was on the road, and the very famous actor who was doing the voice work made it unbearable to listen to. And I won't say who that was, but it's just reminds me how important it is to have an engaging author reading. And I love when authors voice their own audiobooks. I think David Sedaris does a really fun job of reading his
book. Don't always, though.
No?
They're not always good.
Oh, who reveal some names, Kyle. Who doesn't do a good job?
Name.
Dish.
I don't know if I should do that.
No, don't do that.
I would mention some long dead people.
Okay.
No, I mean, David Sedaris, I mean, he sounds like the work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of ironic, witty, but I still think, you know, I've heard Allen Ginsberg's Howl recited by countless people in such a beautiful oratorical way, and hearing Ginsberg read it was so disappointing, you know, so... Mm-hmm. We always think about people reading their own work. They're not always the best readers of
That's
their
fair.
Own work.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Here's a note from Tate on Twitter. She says, I've read 46 books so far this year, as well as completing my reading challenge. Favorites include Exit West, Never Home, We Have Always Lived in the Castle, Yes, Please, and The Mothers. And I know Exit West, that was on your list, I think, Kyle, right?
Yeah, Exit West is brilliant.
Mm-hmm. What is Exit West?
So Exit West is by Haseem, I'm getting the name
Hamid?
Right, Hamid. And it's about essentially the refugee crisis. It's set in an unnamed country torn apart by war. And a couple come together, Nadia and Saeed, and there begin these rumors about a door that will lead to the West. So it's a literal door, like in, you know, C.S. Lewis, where you enter through this door and you go from that war-torn country to a place somewhere in the West. And, you know, it's about place, it's about It's about tradition. It's a warm, rich novel, a little bit of magical realism in that. It's a great book.
Great. Exit West. We're down to our last couple minutes, and I know that our guests have their piles of books, and we haven't had a chance to talk about all of them. So I just want to quickly go around the table and talk about any that we haven't had time to address yet. Leslie, we'll start with you. You have a second book that you brought.
Oh, my second book is an excellent book. It's Bernice L. McFadden, The Book of Harlan. And it takes place around 1920s in New York. And it's, in essence, without giving away much, of course, an African-American jazz musician is, he finds himself in a concentration camp. And it's a blend of factual, factual information about that time as well as, fiction. So I really enjoyed it. And one thing about the book, that some of the chapters are maybe 1 to 2 pages. And I'm always fascinated with that type of structure. So that is what initially drew me to the book when I noticed that. But it is just mesmerizing. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And Tony, how about you? You've got a couple others there.
I'll just mention one, and that is...
That's okay. You've got a couple seconds.
Isaac Bassoff's Singers, The Slave, and it was written in 1962.
Great, thanks. Well, Candace is diligently taking notes, so our thanks to her for thinking ahead, unlike what I was doing.
It's the teacher in me.
I love it.
It's wonderful to watch her do that.
Very quickly, everybody, Tony, where can people find you to read about your work and what you do?
Oh, I don't know. Somewhere, I guess.
He has a book coming out next year.
I do have a book in February called Meditation Archipelago. It's a book of poems.
Thank you. And Leslie, where can we find you?
LeslieCYoungblood.com or Leslie C. Youngblood on Facebook.
Great.
Please follow me.
Thank you so much. Candace Hudson, we can find it. Northwood Elementary School in Hilton.
Yes, you can also follow me at ThatHudson93 on Twitter.
Thanks. And Kyle Semmel at Writers and Books. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you all for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.